in that movie, and let us know what you want us to fight about.
The movie is The Post.
Good night.
Good night.
And now it's time for Stages.
Stages.
All the world's a stage.
It's where we talk about,
all things theatrical.
It's about theatre.
Theatre makers.
If it's performing on a stage, we've got it for you here on Stages.
And welcome to Stages, our very long 1 hour summer festival and all other things that are going on across the Sydney and greater regions. I'm Regina Botros to take you through the next hour with Trish Stars in the studio. Welcome.
Oh, thanks, Regina. It's great to be here.
There's so much going on. Isn't there a nice vibe out there?
Oh, there certainly is. So much fun.
What have you been to see?
Oh, well, I did go down and do the Fish, which was just fantastic.
Yeah, we had a chat with them last week.
Yeah, and it's great. You go down there, you freeze some fish, and then you watch them melt as the sun goes down. It's absolutely fantastic. There's also a great installation there on the harbour at Bangaroo, where you can go down and there's a beautiful boat there, and it's got a fire burning in the boat, but it's also got Aboriginal women speaking about fishing and about colonisation and about how they are still here and they still exist and they are still talking with about colonialisation and about what they want in the future and now. So that is a very present kind of experience as well, where the past meets the present, and it's actually quite beautiful. And the ramp that goes out to the boat really does go up and down with the tide, so it depends when you're there, and it really moves around towards the evening. So you go right down, and then sometimes you have to walk right up to get to see this boat. And I had no idea that the tidal pool around Barangaroo was so high and low like that. So it's another discovery about Sydney.
Yeah, right. Well, another thing that we've both been to see is the Katharina Gross. The horse trotted another couple of meters and then it stopped. That's what it's called. I didn't realize that when we went to see it, but it's in the carriage works, in the foyer area, all that colorful material, kind of cloaking and wrapping, internally wrapping the inside of the carriage race, which is a massive thing, and it's just beautiful to be in that space.
It is. It's beautiful to go inside.
Yeah.
Very atmospheric, and to see the paint on the calico everywhere. And the way it's hung is quite nice because it accentuates which colours are where and how it's been painted. So, yeah, that was really beautiful to go inside.
That was a site-specific work that she made especially for that, in response to the architecture of the carriage works, a kaleidoscope of colours. Yeah. Mm. And you've been to see some music too?
Yes, I saw Yutha Yindi on Friday night, which was, I have to say, a little bit like going to a croppery, I thought.
Because, oh, really?
Yeah, it was loose as a goose and fantastic and loud and wonderful and inspiring.
Yeah.
They had Shane come up and sing from Goanna. I think you remember years ago.
Yes.
And he sang his famous song, Solid Rock, with the Yutha Yindi band, and sort of reinterpreted the song and brought out some of the lyrics. And that was quite a special moment. They also invited up some Bangara dancers to dance with them. Oh, that was incredibly special.
That's great.
So when they sang the final hit, Treaty, which we all know and love, it was wonderful to see the dancers dance to that, and in contemporary clothes, and then some in the Arnhem Land traditional. But the younger people were all just in torn jeans, very relaxed, and such a party vibe. It was really wonderful that we can see something like that, and that the Yutha Yindi project goes on, encouraging young people to get to know culture, to experience dance, to experience music, to experience the instruments. It's just wonderful. It's so inspiring, actually. And, you know, I just want to go to Arnhem Land now and have a party there with those guys. They're great. And girls.
Yeah. Wow. So we've got a great show coming up. There's so much to talk about this week. We've got reviews later on of things to go and see. Mm-hmm. But we'll be talking with Whist, which is a company out of the UK, mixing dance and VR, virtual reality. So you can experience. We'll find out about that. Seasick also with Caitlin Eames will be in, and Alice in Wonderland, the very special adaptation of that. So stick with us. I'll be playing music from the festival as well. Here's a bit of Basuku Kuyati. You're listening to Stages, our summer special, and that's a little Basuku Kuyati. They're playing down at the Spiegel Tent. Get along and see them. Well, Alice in Wonderland is part of the festival, and we have the producer, Michael Cedars, on the line to have a chat with us about this very special adaptation of the Lewis Carroll fantasy world of Alice, played by Dubs Unipingu. Welcome to Stages, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
So, where did this project start in, you know, the adaptation, which is by Marianne Butler? Where did the beginning of this sort of work begin?
Well, it all started probably back in 2015. I had just finished producing the Very Hungry Caterpillar show, which was touring, and I was looking for something that for my next project. And at the time, I didn't realise it, but in 2015 was the 150th anniversary, so Alice in Wonderland was kind of all around me, and it was, you know, and it just kind of popped into my head that, you know, it would be really great to do a contemporary or Australian twist on that classic. So, and it's such a iconic story that I thought people would love, and that I think I could do some justice to with a bit of a uniqueness to it as well.
And how have you gone about sort of making it more relevant to Australians who are seeing the production?
Well, it's set now. It's set in 2018. We've updated the language, so it's not that Victorian language that people know in the book. It really has a unique Australian quality to the voice of Alice, and to all of the other characters, and also just having Dubs Unipingu play Alice, the first Indigenous woman to play the role, I think already sets it apart from any other production that's out there or that has been you know, staged or on film or on TV or anything like that. So that's really how we've updated and made it relevant.
Have you brought in part of her history as well, or the Indigenous history into the story in that way?
No, we really didn't bring in the Indigenous history to it because I'm a white fella, and those aren't my stories to tell. I really wanted it to be the classic Lewis and Carroll tale, but just with a modern Australian take on it. So it's not an Indigenous story. It is Alice in Wonderland that everyone knows and loves. We just have an Indigenous woman playing the role.
Yeah, there's no reason why Alice can't be played by an Indigenous
Absolutely.
Actor.
And yeah. I think the strength of Alice in Wonderland isn't the fact that she's a blonde-haired, blue-eyed girl. Mm. It's the fact that she's a really strong character and a really strong role model for young girls and boys as well.
Yeah. How do you think that she's a role model?
She's a strong character. She is a powerful girl, even though she may not realize it in the beginning. Throughout her journey, she discovers her voice and she realizes that, you know, she had all of the qualities to be who she wants to be and to navigate the world on her own.
And I mean, solve, she was the first, solve her own.
Absolutely.
Dynamics.
She was the first literary character, female literary character, that wasn't on a journey towards a relationship. She didn't have a sidekick that was a male that was helping her through her journey. She was doing it by herself. That in itself is remarkable for a book that was written in 1865. And we've really honed in on that quality of Alice and brought it to the fore in this production.
And I was just wondering, too, about any of the other characters. What about the Mad Hatter? Is there any... Can you give us any insights into how you've done that sort of...
The Mad Hatter is just one of those characters that we really didn't want to play around too much with that. He is a character that pretty much remains true in this. You know, throughout Alice's journey, she encounters so many, you know, big, strong, opinionated male characters, and he's one of those. And he's really one of those kind of points in the story that people really want to see. So we really haven't messed around with him too much. He's still a crazy loon that just tries to, you know, stop Alice in her tracks. So, but it's one of the most satisfying moments in the production as well.
It's a terrific story, and the kind of the way that she becomes small and big, and how is that worked on the stage? Is it sort of a very kind of visually theatrical production?
Yeah, absolutely. So that was probably one of the biggest challenges that we had to face as theatre makers, is how to, in a live space, make Alice really tiny and then also extraordinarily tall. What I love about theatre is that everything happens in front of you. I'm not a fan of multimedia in theatre, and especially for kids. I mean, they're so bombarded by screens anyway throughout their day that I go into a live space and see theatre magic happen in front of you is just amazing. And so we use a whole heap of theatre magic tricks. We have a miniature version of Alice, which is basically just a stuffed toy of Alice, and that's her represented as when she's tiny. We also have these giant extendable legs with giant shoes attached to them that represent her when she's big. But we also do something that's really cool, is we kind of go to a blackout and we hear this sound effect of Alice shooting up through the ceiling of the theatre, and some rubble drops down and, you know, sunlight shines through the roof of the theatre.
Oh, wow.
And we alter her voice as though she's in outer space and she's really massive. So it's theatre magic like that I think is really special.
And you said the imagination too. Like, you're encouraging
absolutely.
The use of the adults and the kids there to use their imagination.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's the joy. That's the joy of theatre and being creative. Is, you know, we get to use our imaginations every day, and we want to share that and take kids on that journey with us too.
And so, where is it being staged? Which theatre are you at?
So we're at the Lennox Theatre at Riverside Theatre's Parramatta, and we're on until the 27th of January, and we do two shows a day.
Yes, not morning, but some mornings, some afternoons, some
days, absolutely.
Terrific. Michael Siders, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah,
it just sounds wonderful and magical and exciting for all ages. All ages,
yeah,
it
absolutely.
Seems. Yeah, terrific. Fantastic. Thank you again.
Thanks so much for having me.
That was the producer, Michael Siders, of Alice in Wonderland, a very special, fantastical twist to the story. This is a little Glyn who are playing at the Carriage Works this Friday evening as part of Sydney Festival. I'm here with Rock and Pascal, and they've just been in to see the show Brainiacs. Rock, how was it?
It was pretty entertaining. Like, I thought it would be kind of boring, but, you know, it was actually quite funny, like, genuinely funny for a kid of my age. Like, not just, like, complete raw, like, you know...
Dumbed down sort of stuff.
Dumbed down humour. It was good.
So this is a live show of a television show that looks at science or the brain, or it's called Brainiac. So how is it?
It's got science in it. They make science more, you know, entertaining, funnier, more interesting. You know, they had lots of explosions. That's one thing that they had, loads of explosions. So if you're a Michael Bay fan, you'd really like to go there.
And Pascal, what was your favourite moment of the show?
My favourite moment was when they were talking about electricity on fences, and they had this thing where a human grabbed the fence and it shocked them because it went through their body down to the mat of, I think it was foil?
Yeah,
connected up to a car battery, and then there was this platform they standed on and they didn't feel the pain.
But you saw what happened to their body when the shock went through?
Yes, they screamed and jumped.
So you did see some kind of physical... Because I always wonder what happens to you if you do touch those fences.
Yeah, they also put a pole with a metal rod around it and tapped it on and made a giant spark explosion.
And what was your favourite moment, Rock, or experiment?
They had a part about, like, songs where you mishear and...
Mondegreen, I think it's called.
Yeah. It was pretty entertaining, like some, you could say, popular songs, I guess.
Did they talk about what that is? Like, you know, what happens in the brain or something?
It was basically, they kind of talked about it. They said how it works is your brain doesn't hear it correctly and it doesn't want to make you stop, so it just pretends that's the actual words. So you think that it's different than what it actually is.
So if you don't understand it, the brain sort of fills in between.
Yes, it just says what you think it is, not what the actual lyrics is.
Okay, can you remember a song, Pascal?
No, though I remember only one of the artist's song. I think it was One Direction, wasn't it?
Oh, One Direction, okay.
They made a joke about that your brain goes one direction and then they put one of their songs on that made you mislead.
So was it a good show?
Oh, well, yeah, I'd maybe rate it 7.5 out of 10.
Well, Rock and Pascal there with Brainiacs Live, a review. They're 12 years old, but the show is rated from 7 up. And you can get along and see it up until the 25th of January.
And
this is a little Femina. They're playing at the Spiegel Tent on Sunday at 3 o'clock. That magical mirrored room that's been travelling the world for a long time. Femina.
De la realidad, las cosas que me sorprendían. Hoy en día ninguna me deslumbra de verdad. Los fantasmas que intento atrapar se me escabullen en los brazos. Tendría que aceptar mi realidad o pedirle a los astros que tengan piedad. Aquí estoy trabajando, no pierdo la dignidad. Con este hambre voraz, queriendo siempre más y más. Creyendo que algún día va a poder saciar. Fantaseando que en algún momento de la vida me crecerían alas para poder volar. ¿Y a quién no le falta el aliento? En este aposento de frivolidades hay que estar atento para no pasarse de ingenuidades. ¿Quién le dijo que él y yo éramos rivales? Más bien amantes, correteamos por los valles incesantes. Creímos ser como la encina y el roble, permanecer unidos, no ser inmortales y así vivir un amor de eternidades. Y así vivir nuestro amor de eternidades. Desaparecer antes de mojarme otra vez los pies en la luna. No quisiera desaparecer antes de mojarme otra vez los pies en la luna. Sabiendo que lo lograrías, sabía algo que no sabía. Día a día se te pasó el tranvía. Otra vez estás luchando contra la deriva. Quisiera desenmascarar al enmascarado, aquel que te suceda ver el mundo conquistado. Se ha colocado una careta y no protesta, patea a quien sea con tal de alcanzar su meta. Se me está haciendo difícil con usted interactuar. Trastabilla su lengüeta cada vez que intenta hablar. ¿Quién le dijo que él y yo éramos rivales? Más bien amantes, correteamos por los valles incesantes. Creímos ser como la encina y el roble, permanecer unidos, no ser inmortales y así vivir un amor de eternidades. Y así vivir nuestro amor de eternidades. No quisiera desaparecer.
And you're listening to Stages, a very special Sydney Festival summer season hour-long show. And one of the things that's going on as part of the festival is Whist, which is coming out from a UK company called A&E. And we have one of the performers, well, not the performer, but the artistic director and creator of this work, Whist, Aoi Nakamura. Welcome to Stages.
Hi, thank you for inviting me.
Thanks for coming in. So this is an incredible sounding production. It's a virtual reality using case studies from Sigmund Freud's work, which is, you know, why do we think, oh, Sigmund Freud must be about sex then?
Not well, it can be, but it is a lot about sexualism.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. So how many case studies are you working with and how did this sort of come about?
Yeah, so we sort of had a concept of creating something around Minotaur of the Greek mythology.
Minotaur, but, oh yes.
Yeah, Minotaur.
The half.
Yeah, exactly. Half bull and half human being who is in the labyrinth because he was too wild.
Okay.
And anyway, so we started off this little concept, but and then after a year of researching about it, then we found out virtual reality. We saw it on TV and was so I could see someone was watching a roller coaster inside a roller coaster, and then someone was falling down, and we thought, okay, that's so immersive. And then we were so intrigued by this technology
because you are predominantly a dance
company,
so, which is why that sort of stood out for you.
Yeah, so we are dancers and choreographers, and myself and my partner Esteban Fumi, who is an artistic director as well. We created this company like 2013. And then anyway, we met the VR after deciding a concept. And then we thought, okay, only the VR, just to make a VR piece, it's nothing. Only the technology is really like nothing if there's no creativity.
That's right.
Yeah, so that's why we took time for us to connect the VR and what can we do as a performance, because we want to merge all the elements together. And then we thought, okay, virtual reality, reality, unconsciousness, consciousness, dream, fears, real and virtual. Okay, let's do, let's go into Freudian case studies.
Mm.
So we went to Freud Museum. And
which is where?
In Hampstead.
Oh, okay.
It's beautiful house where he died at the end. Okay. So yeah, his things are all there. Right. So you could really feel it, you know, like his presence kind of. And then we met a psychoanalyst, Emilia, and she helped us through all the way through of the creating journey. And she sent us lots of materials.
Okay.
But we got inspired by interpretation of dreams, Little Hans, Dora, Wolfman, and then we read unconsciousness and consciousness and uncanny and fears and things. And then we draw all narrative from inspirations.
The
So we took Little Hans, Dora and Wolfman's real patients of Freud. And
Little Hans, Dora and Wolfman, are they particular parts of the psyche or are they particular stories, studies?
It's different patient in a different time.
Okay.
So Freud saw them in different ages and different timeline. But we thought it would be great if we can bring them together.
Uh-huh.
And then so we started to create a whole narrative around us and a family.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. And how does the VR work for the audience? Does the audience actually partake of the VR?
Well, our concept was merging real and virtual. Mm. So how can we then blur the boundary of both world in between? And also during the creation, we had a consciousness of a digital world and then installation and plus the audience journey.
Mm.
So we wanted the audience to have the VR headset all the way through, but shifting in between real and digital, where we then created an app that goes AR to VR, VR to AR. AR, augmented reality, is a bit like a Pokemon Go, that like you can see the reality through the phone or through some media, and all the projection mapping, something that is merging real and digital that you see. And VR is virtual reality, is literally you need to have a headset to have a 360 completely digital world. But then we didn't want it to. So VR experience at the moment is very alone it's one-on-one, but we wanted to create that is something communal, because we are coming from theater. Theater is a communal experience as well. I mean, there is one-on-one experience, of course, there is existing, but we didn't want it to ignore the reality.
Mm.
So that's why, the experience itself, I don't know, did you come?
No, I haven't been yet. No.
You should come.
Yeah, definitely.
Very excited about it.
So once you enter the space, there is a sculpture placed in the space. And then you observe the sculptures, which is linked into the story. Once you explore the object without the Google headset, we will come and give the headset and you will wear the headset. Once you go through the introductions, the virtual reality headset is interacting with the object. So you're going to come back to reality, seen through the camera feed of VR headset. And then you need to walk towards one of the object to trigger the 360 film. Inside the 360 film, you are also determining which path you are taking.
Yeah, you have choices.
Exactly. So depending on where you're looking at the film, without knowing it, and then at the end you're gonna come back. So you have the sequences of reality and going back to VR 360 film, and then reality and going back to VR. So that's four times you do, and going into different objects to see what is inside the object and what that means.
And so what, like, are you being one of the patients of Freud and experiencing how have you used the cases in the story?
It's so we placement of the camera of the 360 film was one of the things that we also explored, and how we can see things differently. That was our thought, or our driving our creation as well, to see different, to have a different perspective of